This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning. You're now listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. In recent years, we've seen a consolidation in the Islamic banking space, with foreign banks closing shop or getting bought out by larger local players. Recently, MIDF, the Malaysian Industrial Development Finance Berhad, had its eyes on Al Rajhi Bank, but that deal seems to have fizzled out. Will MIDF continue its search for a banking license, or are there other plans in the works following that deal falling apart? To find out, I speak with Datuk Sharon Wardini Mogzani, Group Managing Director of MIDF. MIDF is a member of Permodalan Nasional Berhad Group of Companies and a statutory body under the Ministry of International Trade and Industry. Dr. Sharon, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Mr. Roshan. It's a great pleasure to be back.
It's a great pleasure to have you on the show, Dr. Let's start with the original mandate of MIDF, right? It was set up to serve SMEs and provide financing for manufacturing and the like. But now MIDF is involved in everything from asset management to money broking. Has the firm strayed away from the base mandate?
You know, MIDF is one of the oldest institutions we have in Malaysia. It's actually born in 1960, well before I was born, and started off as a result of the World Bank study. Malaysia, or rather Malaya at the time, wanted to modernize, and the World Bank said, if you want to modernize, you need a development finance bank, and that was MIDF. So if you look back in the history, and we're trying to do, because it's actually 60 years old this year, 1960, 2020, and we're doing a history of it, and it's just fascinating the kind of personalities who have been involved, you know, really real heavyweights of the time in the 50s. In the 60s and early 70s were involved, because it was the place you got financing. Now we associate it with SME funding, but not then. You know, the big projects, you know, the big factories were all funded by MIDF. So it's got a long history of being part of Malaysian development. Throughout the years, you know, MIDF has gone through various mergers and restructurings and things like that. So it has a long history of not just being part of, you know, the development of corporate Malaysia and financing of industry in Malaysia. But you're right. As of, you know, this century, certainly in the second decade of this century, which is when I came in, MIDF was predominantly a development finance institution, and it owned an investment bank called MIDF Amanah Investment Bank, and also asset management company called MIDF Amanah Asset Management Berhad. So the businesses are within the group: development finance at the holding company, investment banking, and asset management. So that's what we're doing, and we will continue doing that.
So those are the three, I think, core business pillars, right? We're talking about investment banking, development finance, and as well as asset management. The biggest moneymaker, though, at least for recent times, is investment banking. Mm-hmm. In line with 2019, it represents around 70% of revenue, and this was based on financials for the first half of 2020. But what was not in line was the fact that revenue was up 22% on year. This is for investment banking, a significant jump considering that 2019 saw only like a 6% on year growth. And then this is, I think, we've seen with other investment banks locally and across the world as everyone starts looking for returns in this low rate environment. Has this momentum carried out in the second half of 2020?
No, it's terrible. I mean, COVID-19 has been very, very bad for the economy, very, very bad for many businesses. But and some businesses have not been affected as badly as others. And certainly in some parts of banking, business hasn't been so bad. And so it looks, a result for the moment look promising. But I would wait till we find out more about the total, you know, the effect of COVID on the economy as a whole and on the ability of borrowers to repay before drawing any big conclusions. But certainly when it comes to revenue turnover, there was healthy turnover in the capital markets. We don't have retail broking. But those investment banks who do a lot of retail would have done tremendously well. You know, Bursa broke all records when it came to trading. So, you know, there were some bits where in the banking industry where things did better than others. But even on the fixed income market, you know, as interest rates came down, you know, fixed income did very well as well. Yeah.
But when it comes to your own MIDFs, you don't do retail brokering, but you do. You have corporate finance, underwriting of equities, you've a bunch of other investment.
Yeah, we do things which most of the big investment banks. And one of the things which attracted me to coming back to banking and joining MIDF is the fact that it's got a very small investment bank. I'm a believer, actually, we should have a return to old-fashioned merchant banking. which is what used to happen in the past, where you know, you really look after your customer. You find a few clients whom you trust and whom you believe in, and you back those people. You provide them funding, you provide them advice, you take them in through M&As, you take them to listings, you raise funding for them in the capital markets, whether it's equity or debt, and be a partner with them. And this is what merchant banks used to do back in the day. And I won't say how far back in the day I mean by that. But if you look at the history of merchant banks, that is what they do. And at some point, they turned into investment banks where they use the balance sheet of their parent to, you know, propel growth. And I don't think that kind of business is doable. It may not be the time for that kind of business. The time for that business was there. And perhaps it's time now to have the smaller boutique investment merchant banks, if you will.
Yeah, but some would say that the scale would not be as, let's just say, in this competitive environment, would be tougher to
Yeah, but it's a lot, manage. You know, I think scale is overrated because even with, we have such a deep capital market at the moment, and it's phenomenal how deep it is, that, you know, if you have a good company which wants to raise funding, then you can go to capital markets to raise it. So we have decided to concentrate on green financing, and we've, you know, been fortunate in terms of being able to put together a large number of green funding deals. And, you know, we won actually an award from the Bond Pricing Agency from being the number one issuer of green sukuks. And, you know, it's just phenomenal that if you find the right company and you put together and you explain to the capital markets why these people need funding, you can raise the money. We don't have to have put it all on balance sheet. There's a lot of money out there waiting to be deployed. And, you know, if you go to them with the right deal, then you can get it done.
Do you think that investment banking's momentum will carry on into 2021 based on the information we have at hand right now?
Well, if you look at it, I mean, you know, investment banking, well, certainly the kind of investment banking we'd like to do is M&A, it's equity capital markets, and it's debt capital markets. On the debt capital market front, while, you know, COVID-19 has slowed the economy down, there are still pockets of the economy where people want to invest and want to raise capital. And I think we have enough of a runway on deals of that nature to see that there is something that can happen there. And there is, you know, potential for growth in debt capital markets. In equity capital markets, you know, I mean, amazingly, I mean, you know, all the so-called professionals completely blindsided by how the stock market, you know, reacted so well, you know. In April, May, June, July, all the professionals saying, oh, this is a bubble, it's going to burst. Well, it hasn't burst, you know. It really has shown that there is some legs to the equity markets. And in Malaysia, we've seen, you know, quite a number of IPOs in 2020, which, you know, if you ask anybody in March, will there be an IPO in 2020? They'd say, no way. But in fact, we've had, you know, a couple of large ones as well.
Yeah, Mr. DIY was, I think, one of the biggest in the region, raising quite a bit of money there.
Yeah,
I think only the Thai stock market had bigger IPOs this year.
That's right.
Let's talk about development finance. It's the second largest revenue stream, and it represents around 13% of revenue for the first half of 2020. That's lower than what it was the year before, right? And that was around 19% based on full year contribution. Was this due to the economy and the falling interest rates and loan moratorium, or were there other reasons at play?
Well, the kind of development finance we do is we administer government funds. So MITI sets up a fund to help certain industries, and then we help MITI by making sure that fund is lent out. Now, demand for SMEs in 2020 for funding was a bit muted. You know, lots of people had plans to expand, and then when, you know, things came around, they decided maybe I'll rethink my expansion plans. And when they rethink their expansion plans, obviously they're not going to borrow. And if they don't borrow, then you don't get loan growth. And I mean, loan growth is the secret. I mean, loan growth is just how banks work. You know, and the more you lend out, the more income you make. That's put a bit of a hold on development finance, but it's still going well. And, you know, under the recent budget, we've received more allocation to do automation and modernization loans, because it's very important for the economy for us to, you know, automate and modernize and get into the whole IR 4.0 kind of thing. And we've also got some more funding for digital, as well as more funding for green financing, especially for SMEs. So this is so any SME now who wants to go green, for, I don't know, use solar power for their business needs or anything else, then there is a government fund available with cheap rates. Oh, sorry, lower rates. nothing's ever cheap, but it's just lower rates because there's some government soft loan element to it. There is progressing. But, you know, the SMEs, it's been mixed. Some SMEs in 2020 have done okay, especially those in manufacturing. You know, if you're a manufacturer in the right sector, for example, you manufacture food or you manufacture parts for export, then while business has slowed down, it hasn't been that catastrophic. And in fact, some people have done very well. I mean, if you're in the right kind of food, you're doing quite well. But other people, of course, have been very badly affected. So we have some people who run hotels, some people who run tour buses, some people who run just transport generally, restaurants, and those people have been not so well.
Yeah, travel, tourism, F&B, restaurants, well. not the most bright spot.
No, it's not, and it's going to be hard.
I've been speaking with Dato' Sharon Wardeni Moghzani, Group Managing Director of MIDF. Up next, MIDF search for a banking license and digitalization plans. Keep it here to The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kunnison. Today, I'm speaking with Dato' Sharon Wardeni Moghzani, Group Managing Director of MIDF, the Malaysian Industrial Development Finance, Berhad. Now, Dato, looking at the numbers here, although there's a big revenue difference between investment banking, which represented 70%, development finance was 12% of revenue, their profit contributions are actually very close. Investment banking made 37 million ringgit in profit. Development finance made 30 million ringgit in profit. That gives investment banking a profit margin of around 14 to 15% and development finance a margin of 45%. Why not stick with that focus, especially when there are much bigger investment banks around?
No, I mean, development finance is a very important thing we do, and I think we do it more as a way of you know, ensuring the SMEs are well looked after. Investment banking, on the other hand, is done in completely commercial terms, and you know, the idea is that there is more business out there which we can get, and as soon as we manage to scale up, you know, I think the revenue numbers should go up, should look better. But again, big proviso is that, you know, assuming nothing catastrophic happens.
What about
to the economy?
Yeah, I think everything is pretty much predictable.
Yeah, it all depends on that, really. You know, yeah.
But what about the profitability of investment banking? Is that margin going to be able to, are you going to be able to eke out more of that as time goes on and
yeah,
scale?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you do some M&A transactions, some equity capital market transactions, we can improve it. Income in investment banking, especially kind of investment or merchant banking, which we are doing, is very lumpy. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go for a while, nothing happens.
It's definitely suddenly, inconsistent, to say the least.
Suddenly, something comes along, and then you do okay out of it. But yeah, we are looking at, you know, expanding our kind of business areas in investment banking and looking at other things as well.
Investment banking made a profit, and so did development finance. I think even asset management did. But these were offset by the losses from investment holdings. Could you shed into some light into what happened here?
Yeah, I think looking at our accounts from a kind of entity level doesn't mm-hmm. sometimes make so much sense, because like many other organizations, some costs are centered in one group company, and then those are then charged out to the other members of the group. So it's not so clear. But essentially, no, our businesses are those three businesses we talked about: development finance, investment banking, and asset management. And sometimes, you know, how the costs are, where the costs are booked, is you know, an accident of history. So many costs are booked in the are taken up at the holding company, when perhaps, you know, they could be taken up somewhere else. But you know, just look at the group as a whole and the revenue. But that's the past. We're looking to the future, and we really want to change the complexion of the business.
All right. Now, before we get to the future, last one, the third pillar of your revenue, asset management. I couldn't get a current number here for the ballpark AUM. I think the last report I could find was around 4.1 billion ringgit as of April 2017. Can you tell us what MIDF's ballpark number?
No, it's gone up. It's gone up by a few billion since then. But it is still small. It is still small. It's a very competitive industry, asset management, and you know, you can either sell a do unit trust which is a good business, but has high distribution costs because you normally need lots of agents and such like to distribute your stuff for you. Or you can look after institutional investors, where you don't have to spend so much money on distribution. But on the other hand, they do squeeze you on fees. So it's a hard business to do. So we're going to find the right niche, if you will, for us in that business. And I think, again, being digital should help.
Yeah, because I was just looking at the numbers, and asset management, I think, represents like 2% of group revenue.
No, it's small. I mean, it is small at the moment, but you know, clearly it can become bigger.
In 2006, MIDF Group outlined its ambition to be one of the leading financial service providers in the three core business areas. And I think it's fair to say that that's not necessarily the case 14 years later. What's the mandate going forward?
Excellent question. As you know, we were supposed to merge with Al Rajhi Bank, and that was on the cards even before I joined. I think the shareholders of MIDF, which is PNB, and the shareholders of Al Rajhi Malaysia, the Al Rajhi Group from the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, were considering to do some kind of merger, and it would have been probably 70-30 around that. I mean, if you just compare the relative shareholders' funds or book values of both companies, it'd be around that kind of number. For various reasons, the shareholders have decided not to proceed with the merger. I think, if you ask me, primarily because there wasn't a consensus on, you know, the kind of business Sharia Bank, an Islamic bank, should be doing in Malaysia. As you may know, they do things slightly differently in Saudi Arabia than they do here. And it was a discussion on you know, how we should proceed in this merge group. So the ambition to become a full service or a universal Islamic bank is still there. The question is, how do you do it? And I think, you know, the amazing thing now is the advent of digital. Mm-hmm. Things have changed so much. I mean, even during the COVID period, you know, one thing has happened is that digital adoption has just gone through the roof. You know, we take for granted now doing things on our phones, which would have been unimaginable a year ago, unimaginable. And, you know, for example, even in my office, you know, we now, almost all of us work from home. Mm-hmm. And if you told me in February that I could get 80% of our people to work from home and our systems would operate, I just thought you're mad. But it worked. You know, it's done. We've done it. So the ability and the capacity to go digital is there. And I think Malaysians are very good at adapting, and we adapted very fast. So anyway, getting back to this, is that, you know, the prospect of starting an all digital bank seems even, you know, more and more promising than it did even a year ago. And I think we can go ahead and do this and start a whole new digital bank.
And BNM does have the framework that's still
being. Yeah, I mean, the thing about digital bank, it depends what you mean by a digital bank. You know, you can do many banking. If banking means you know, accepting people's money, well, you know, we can put them into funds, in many kind of unit trust funds where people can put their savings in. If money means being able to take a loan, yes, you know, we can lend them. You can do SME loans, and we can do other kinds of loans as well. And if banking means, you know, helping people invest, we certainly can do that, whether it's direct in the stock market or again, as I was mentioning earlier, through unit trusts or other managed investments. So I think there's a lot of scope to do things, even with the existing licenses we have. And I do believe we can do something quite interesting.
So no longer on the hunt for a conventional banking license?
I'd rather neither confirm nor deny any of our intentions on that one. I mean, you know.
I mean, there is still one other Islamic bank, a foreign bank, that has, no one's approached them yet. I think that's Kuwait.
There are a number of banks in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. The number of banks in Malaysia, some, you know, where it's possible to do come to some kind of arrangement with the shareholder. And we'll see. It'll also depend on my shareholder, MIDF shareholder, which is PNB. And also depend on, you know, the attitude of the regulators, et cetera.
Yeah.
But, you know, just because the Al Rajhi transaction is not going ahead doesn't mean that we've abandoned our aims of becoming a digital Islamic bank.
So let's talk about that a little bit, actually, because I think that's particularly interesting, because you did break it down quite well there, because digital banking, I think when most of us think about it, it's the conventional consumer bank that we think about, right? But there are so many different elements to that.
Yeah.
Does MIDF have any intention of of getting into the digital virtual banking license that is being talked about now? Because I think the recent news was in Singapore, though. Grab and Singtel have gotten one license there, so they're going to be working on that. On the Malaysian front, is that on the? Are you looking at that?
Well, you know, if you already have a banking license, there's not much need to have a digital banking license on top of it, because, you know, a normal bank can do everything a digital bank can do. And, and whereas there's some things a normal bank can do which a digital bank can't do. So if you have the first one, you don't need the second one.
Are you in any talks, in any consortiums in this lead up to this virtual banks that we're looking at?
How do I put this? We have lots of friends, and we always talk to our friends. So, we're talking to people to see what's the best way of tackling this thing. Whether it's tying up with someone to go for a virtual banking license, or to tie up with someone to concentrate on the banking licenses we already have, or whatever. So there are many possibilities still there.
What is the, could you give us a clear example of what kind of digitalization plan MIDF is looking at? An example that could at least clear up, or at least help us visualize where MIDF is headed?
Well, we're going to launch one product fairly soon. Fairly soon means, you know, by the first quarter of next year.
Now, let's, I think, wrap up this conversation with taking a look at your relationship with PNB, right? It's your sole shareholder. What are the KPI from PNB?
Well, PNB is very clear. Give us dividends, because we have to give dividends to our unit holders. And that's a nice clear, I love clear KPIs like that. You know, there's no messing around. This is what I want to give. Now, we deliver a certain amount of dividends to them every year. We should obviously be doing more than that. And we will strive to give them more than that.
And does MIDF's future or its current business depend or get support from PNB in any way in terms of business or even PNB group of companies?
Yeah, we'd love to be in the in-house investment bank for PNB. They haven't quite made us the in-house investment bank yet. They still, unfortunately, give business to other people. So we're working on that one. But no. I mean, PNB are a wonderful shareholder. They give us a lot of support. And as I said, they're very clear policy direction from them. And, you know, and we compete for their business just like everybody else competes for their business. So we just did one transaction for them. They took private, one of their property trust funds. And you can see that one. But, you know, we want to do more with PNB.
And just looking forward, right, talking about direction there. In 2017, then PNB chairman, I think Tan Sri Abdul Wahid Omar, acknowledged that an Islamic banking license and a return to the stock market are possibilities for MIDF's future as part of a larger plan to promote Islamic finances in Malaysia. Now, 3 years was a long time ago, in all fairness.
It's a lifetime ago.
A lifetime ago at this point. But is there a focus around this merger or this possible merger that was, for example, the Al Raji one, part of a longer term plan to eventually relist MIDF after being taken private back in 2007?
I think you have to ask my shareholder on that one. I mean, obviously that we would like to do it, but the shareholders will have their own agenda in terms of if and when this listing happens, because, you know, all right, it affects them. But yeah, because we love to be listed, it gives you the flex, you know, it gives you room to grow and keeps you on your toes as well.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today.
No, pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I was speaking with Dato' Sharon Wardini Mokhzani, Group Managing Director of MIDF, and you've been listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Karnison for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.